Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton and our producer, Katie Galley, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. And Stone, this will be a fun one.
Hey, this is going to be a fantastic show. We got a studio full. First up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, please join me in welcoming to the broadcast co-founder and CEO with Creative Mischief, Mr. Chris Sizemore. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
We are delighted to have you. So tell us, what mission, purpose, what are you guys out there doing for folks?
We are a full-service digital branding marketing agency founded in 2008. With the goal to become true business partners with our clients.
Founded in 2008. Some things happening right around 2008 that would have encouraged me to maybe keep my day job.
There was a few things. August 1, 2008 was day one, but with my business partner and support of our wives, or as we also call them, our bosses, we got the blessing and didn't look back. Just move forward.
So now you started in that difficult time. Did you have already clients from previous life?
So my business partner had a few side projects here and there. And as we were neighbors and decided to say, hey, you know, I can come from the business side, him from the marketing strategy side. Let's give it a shot. We landed a few clients, then landed a healthcare client and realized that if we were going to do it, we need to do it full time. So we both quit our day jobs, brought on a staff. Our first employee was actually our bartender. But he was a natural creative, and we taught him what design was about, what user experience was about, truly listening to our clients, and we haven't looked back.
And then, so take us through that beginning stages when you were all just, I guess, hanging out in one of your houses at the beginning?
We were actually lived on the west side of town, and he would always come and ask me questions on from this business standpoint or account relations standpoint. What do you think? And I'd say, hey, try this. Because my experience inside the law firm that I was at, I was doing IT and marketing. And we just kept going back and forth. And we finally said, you know, why not? Let's try it. And, you know, through some favors at the law firm, they helped us form the business. And then we landed a few things. We did something for Magic Johnson's Burger Kings, which won an Emmy Award. And then when we landed the healthcare client, it was a large enough project that if we were going to do it, we need to do it the right way when that was come on full time.
And then at that point, did you get office space or you're always virtual or?
No, our first offices were our house. Mm-hmm. And then we had one client that actually owed us some money. So
it became their office.
And so we did. We actually,
I like it.
As we grew, we actually stayed in their office for a little bit until we got our first office on the west side of town, right off the Howe Mill area.
Right.
And then we are now in Midtown.
And so has it just been a rocket ship once you got that big client, then it just kept building or has it been up and down?
When we first landed that big client, we're like, oh, this is great.
This is easy, right?
This is going to be great. Then we realized, you know, larger client, you know, they'll pay net 120 plus sometimes. And when we started, we took out no loans, no lines of credit, grew the whole business off cash flow, all word of mouth business referral. So it was probably harder than I thought, but probably just as rewarding as well. I wouldn't change a thing.
So now when that's a good piece of advice for businesses starting up, how do you kind of create those referral opportunities when it is make or break? Like every referral is kind of the lifeblood of the business.
It is. I think for us, it's really with the fact of we're true partners with our clients that it's okay to tell them, no, I think you're going to waste your money. Even though that's taken revenue away from us of like, I think you're better invest here. And that's why we really come at it from a business consulting standpoint first, understanding where their goals and objectives, just not for the first 6 months, but for the next 5, 6, 10 years, and really helping them put together a marketing plan that ties back into business strategy. And in doing that, our clients have realized that we truly are partners of theirs and want to be good stewards of their money and make sure they're getting the ROI that they're looking for. And that's what's helped us with our referrals.
Now, when you're talking about ROI, talk through that conversation through, because like, everything, some of your work, I'm sure, is like, okay, let's run ads on Facebook or LinkedIn or things like that.
For us, it gets back, what are the goals and objectives at the beginning? Is it, most clients come to us with a pain point. Hey, we have this pain point. Well, it's easy to fix a pain point, but it's a little bit harder to come in with a solution that completely alleviates that. So determining what ROI is it, return on investment if we're helping with Salesforce and Pardot implementations and doing marketing automation for our clients of how many new leads that they get
right.
or that are qualified? Or is it, hey, we just need brand awareness. The work that we're doing doesn't match the collateral that we have, doesn't match the website that we should have. So it's truly determining what that ROI is, because you can have, do a billboard or you can do advertisements, but you know, determining what that ROI is, because ROI always isn't a financial return, but it's an awareness return.
And then and that's defined really by the client.
We help them define that upfront to really go in. So we'll interview, it could be the C-suites, it could be the staff, it will interview their clients to truly determine what they do well, what they don't do well, what they want out of their clients and what their clients want out of them. A lot of times most businesses don't do that. They just say, hey, you know, everybody's doing this. Everybody's doing virtual reality or they're in augmented reality. We just need to do it. Well, the reality is if it doesn't fit your business goals and objectives and purpose, don't do it.
Right.
Let's do something that actually means something to your business.
Now, when you're working with the customers, this what's the typical kind of first point of entry?
For us, a lot of times it's, I would say, 50-50 between either technology or the marketing team.
And so they're like implementing a new software and you're helping them implement that?
They could come in and, for example, we have a few clients right now who said, we implemented this software and, you know, it's not really helping our sales team. It's not helping our marketing team. And the reality is they went out, bought some software, sold a bill of goods, but then there was no people process in place. How are we going to manage it? How are we going to run it? You know, there was no content flow going into, no strategy behind it. So they
buy like, oh, because marketing automation, everybody's involved. So they're like, oh, I'll just buy that and it solves my marketing automation problem, right?
And we just walk away. They don't realize, well, you got to feed
the beast now.
You got to feed the beast. What are your user journeys? Do you know your different audience segmentations? Right. You know, you got to write the content for them. And then at some certain point with your lead scoring, when does that relationship start? When you pick up a phone?
So you're able to kind of help them in a more holistic manner.
It's absolutely, to me, I think that's the only way to go in marketing. And I think we're seeing that as we have more of the larger Omnicom groups, the WPPs, who are getting pushback, like Procter & Gamble's been pushing back, like, where are you spending our money? How are things working?
Right.
What can we do?
It's like a black hole, the marketing
budget. Right. It's, we got to be as transparent with what we're doing and helping educate our clients on why we're doing it and what we're doing.
So when you're working with them that closely, I would imagine then the project kind of creeps, right? So now you've helped them alleviate that pain there. And then they're like, well, can you help us with this over there? Is that how the relationship
is? Yeah, we've been really fortunate that most of our clients have grown once we've been in there, because they realize it is a true partnership. Our team can augment some of their team members. And then over time, we've even helped them write job descriptions and say, hey, you should hire somebody
to take my place.
To take my place, right. Because this is better for you from a business standpoint.
From internally,
and we can move over here and focus on that more strategy.
Now, when you're talking about on one side kind of tactics that are driving revenue and sales, and then the other side that are creating awareness and brand, how do you kind of delineate between both of those?
I think there's strategy across the board. I mean, from awareness and brand, it's strategy leads everything. So even if somebody comes in and say, we need a new logo, we need a new brand, we need to refresh our brand. Okay, well, why do you need it? Do you feel like that your company's been around for 40 years?
Well, sometimes they get bored of it.
Right, they get bored of it. They feel like, hey, we're bored with it. But if it really resonates with them, okay, then it's not a complete refresh. Maybe we can use topography or a few other little tweaks to enhance the brand a little bit, but you're not losing the core of who the brand is.
Now, how did the name Creative Mischief come about?
I give all the credit to my business
bartender.
we give Joe a lot of credit. But my business partner, it was a name that he had that I believe he had a dog named Mischief. And she was a mischief dog for sure. And then he had the creative part of it. It was just something that really fit. We chose the Pegasus for forward thinking, always looking ahead, looking at new opportunities.
And then, so it's kind of a playful name. Do you have to kind of live into that brand? Like, how do you live into that kind of the quirkiness?
Yeah, I mean, we have fun. It's, you know, as a small agency, you know, we have to have a culture that leads, because we're not going to be able to compete a lot of times with these, you know, multi-billion-dollar conglomerates right there. So
a lot
culture,
of times.
Yeah, a lot of times.
They might have some resources.
They might have some resources. But what we can offer is, it is culture. Culture leads everything. I'm a true believer that you can keep your team members there if the culture of the company is good. And so Creative Mischief plays into that. We'll be playful. We'll have fun. you know, let our, in the summer, let our staff work from home on Fridays if they need to. If they need to work remotely, let them work remotely during the week. Let's turn out great work for our clients. And the best compliment we can get is when a client says, you know, I really feel like, you know, this is a family. Let's go have a beer. Let's go have a drink.
Now, there's a portion of your business, or maybe not a portion, but maybe the culture is kind of socially motivated, that you consider yourself social entrepreneurs in some ways.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I always wanted to start something growing up, whether it was, I don't know if anybody remembers these friendship bracelets when they first came out. I was riding my bicycle down the street selling friendship bracelets. I cut grass. My business partner, he bought an old printing press from the 1800s, which is actually how our business cards are printed, to do wedding invitations. It was always like, let's create. We're always very creative. Let's make something. He makes boats in his spare time. And it's, for me, it's the encouragement of somebody's belief or spark inside. So for my kids, it's like, they could be a soul entrepreneur. Like my daughter wants to do a lemonade stand, or she wants to make a little book, you know, encouraging those things for people to do, that we all have that inside of us, whether we go out on our own or do it, or we're creating something within a company that we're already at.
So now as an agency, how do you kind of live that?
So we really encourage our team to ask questions. I'm an opinionated guy. I ask a lot of questions. It doesn't mean that I'm always right, but we encourage our team to do that, because if our designers are talking to our developers and our user experience and our content folks, they're all talking together. They're all going to see a problem or a potential solution different ways. So how do we bring them together? So we have that real open door policy to, let's have honest conversations about what's best for the client and go from there. And we encourage that type of conversation.
Can I get a little real-time consulting here for a minute?
Of course.
All right. So I'd love it, I think, if the Business Radio X network had an agency, somebody that was kind of watching our back on all this stuff. We have from time to time, and now is one of those times, represented by Katie, have had people that are really ambitious. They are creative, maybe even mischievous, and they're good at different aspects of things in the social media, and they think of great ideas, and they execute, and they do what they say they want to do. But I'm enamored with the idea of having a professional firm, right? That's on our team, in our corner. What I am a little bit intimidated by, I guess, I do not have any confidence at all in my ability to vet three firms. Like if I had three firms come and visit with us, I just don't feel like I know what to ask. And I don't feel like I know how to evaluate the answer. So any counsel you might offer somebody like me or anyone else out there struggling with that. And I think maybe many are.
I think if anything, no matter what practice it is, but for us, we're going to go in there and ask business questions about your business. And if they're not asking those types of questions just in the first phase, we'll go in and talk to a client for the first time, just see if we're actually going to be a good fit to put together a proposal. And we'll probably spend an hour and a half. And it's almost like a free consulting of asking these business questions. Where are your pain points? What are you trying to do? What have you tried? What haven't you tried? Do you have technology that's working for you? Or if it's not working for you, do you think it's a people problem? Just a general conversation. And if somebody's not coming in asking those questions, and they've got an out-of-the-box solution they're going to come in and give you. And nothing out-of-the-box works. We have frameworks that we've built. So for the legal industry, we do a lot of legal work because of my background. We have a framework that works for attorneys and law firms, but every law firm's different. You got to fit it to the business, and you got to do business studies. We have a client here in Georgia that they have the world's only biodegradable and compostable plastic made from canola oil. And so they vetted a bunch of firms, but we were the only ones that drove down there about 2 hours away and sat with them for an hour and a half to ask all these business questions. Because if we don't start there, or any agency doesn't start there, they're just going to, here's our playbook, here's what we use, and they're going to try to do that. So the best way to know is, one, listen to your gut. If you get a good feeling, it should be pretty right on. But make sure they're asking you business questions. If they're not asking you business questions and how it's going to relate, where are you going to go, or maybe what hasn't happened with the radio, they're not asking those questions, then I would question it.
Now, can you talk a little bit about your Giving Forward initiative?
Absolutely. I'm a native of Georgia, born and raised here. Philanthropy is part of what my parents instilled in me, and it's something that we wanted to do at Creative Mischief. So we ask our staff what are initiatives that they want to do. So last year, we did pro bono work for a number of nonprofits around town. I would say the biggest one that I'm most proud of is from November 2015 through November 2016. I helped form and lead the Safe Harbor Fund for Sexually Exploited Children. So it was Constitutional Amendment number 2 on our ballot. It was the same year that we had the governor wanting to do the education that was getting a lot of the attention. And from that time, from November to November, we were able to raise enough awareness from a statewide standpoint. Our team donated all of our time to do website, email marketing, content strategy, social, branding, everything, that we were able to get 83% of the vote to win that constitutional amendment. It's the highest constitutional amendment ever won in the history of the state of Georgia over the lottery.
And then that initiative was, you decided as an organization to go and support that cause?
I sit on the board of United Way, and we do a lot with United Way and other nonprofits. And it was brought to my attention that 63% of our state has reported cases of child sex trafficking. And as a father, I was dumbfounded. I was hurt. I was angry. I was sad. I didn't know why. We always assume it's the airport. Airport, some of it, but not all of it. Most of it is in the northern sector of our state. So I said, you know, we can do something about it. And what this does is, now that it's passed, it creates a permanent fund for these child victims. And that's, you know, under 17, but that's rehabilitation services. That's medical, that's housing, that's counseling. Because those are things that, you know, these kids don't choose to be in here.
Right.
It's been a situation that they've been dealt in their life for whatever it is. How can we help them moving forward? Because it's a generational thing that, you know, we can't fix it with one counseling session. It's going to be years of support and services. And so for us is, you know, we really want to be a business that's not just taking from it from a financial standpoint from the community, but giving back as much as possible.
And so now that was one year's initiative. Then every year you choose a different
One. Last year we did all the branding and pro bono material for the Make-A-Wish Gala. We've done stuff for Pride, whether it's small or big. We've got some of our staff who are in the Cobb area that have little nonprofits that they work for. So we'll support them, whether it's sponsorship or giving creative work like that.
So that just built into the DNA of the agency?
Absolutely. I mean, it has to be. You know, the agency is so personal to all of us that if all of our DNA, not just mine or my business partners, our staff, but their DNA isn't touching the business, then that gets back to what type of culture are we really bringing.
Now, do you see any trends for the coming year that you're paying attention to that you're recommending more so for your clients?
Yeah, I think
it's a good fit.
I think now you're going to see the biggest trend, of course, with everything that's going on, more privacy issues, which that's been something for a while. I think that's going to continue. I think the biggest trends that I actually tell clients to be aware of is strategy. I mentioned it a few minutes ago of everybody wants to do augmented reality, virtual reality. That's expensive. I mean, it can get costly. Right. And at the end of the day, does it really tie into your budget? So with any trend, I say start with your strategy of your business first. If it fits you, then it can be a good fit. If it doesn't fit you, then the trend's just a fad. Don't worry about it.
Right. And if somebody wanted to learn more and have a more substantive conversation with you or somebody in your firm, what's the best way to get a hold of
you? They could go to our website and check us out, creative-mischief.com, or I love coffee in the mornings. We can get a coffee. Give me a call.
And then if they want to learn more about that human trafficking initiative, that's through the United Way?
United Way, Street Grace, Georgia Cares, a lot of those organizations are really doing it. The true leaders behind it, and when it comes to nonprofit, are women. So United Way's Women's Leadership Council, they're a group of phenomenal women who really have spearheaded this. And so I'd be happy to connect you with anybody with some of those individuals.
Yeah, I know we've covered that topic here a few times, and it is just shocking.
It's shocking. Luckily, you know, we've actually had a governor that's been great. We've had legislators. We had a lot of legislation passed this year that has been really beneficial. That's going to help out. So
how do you get the new business? This has been a very informative conversation for me. And it strikes me that there's more than a couple of agencies around town.
Yeah, there's a few.
You know, and I may or may not have known to call you if I was, you know, really
right.
The timing was right. And I wanted to vet those three or talk to some folks. Are you good at eating your own cooking and you've got your own in-house kind of mischievous marketing effort?
I mean, so all the way we've done marketing really is a still referral-based marketing. This year, we are going to kick off more of an awareness campaign to let people tell our own story. As most businesses, it's hard to tell your story.
Right.
But it literally has been, you know, referral based since we started. And that's me out in the public. That's me sitting on different boards, my business partner, or as our clients have grown, they've gone to other jobs. They've taken us with us. So it's really been a referral based business, which I think it's probably a slower way to grow for most businesses, but I think it's the foundation that it's given us has been really, really well.
And you've invested in those relationships. You've delivered results for those relationships.
Absolutely.
Yeah, fantastic. One more time, best way for somebody to reach out and have a conversation with you or somebody on your team.
You can give me an email at chris@creative-mischief.com or visit us on our website at creative-mischief.com.
Well, keep up the mischief, man.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much for coming and hanging out
with us.
Thanks
for having me.
Morning.
I loved it.
Hey, stay with us. We're going to visit with a couple more folks. All right?
Absolutely.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have with us, Lee, she's a board member. Not
a board
one time,
member.
At least two times. She's with the Business Marketing Association. She's on that board. She's on the board of TAG, I think. And she's a senior account exec for a company called Exhibitus. Please join me in welcoming to the show, Miss Stacy Beville. Good morning.
Good morning. So glad to be here.
Did I get all that right or did I make some of those credentials up?
No, those are all true.
You are a busy lady.
I am.
So tell us about the day job, Exhibitus. What does your Thursday look like over there?
Oh my gosh. Well, so Exhibitus is a full service trade show exhibit design firm right here in Atlanta. We've been in business for 24 years and I've been with the company for 16. So it's been really exciting watching it grow. We're actually 110 plus employees strong and have three different offices now, one in Chicago and one in New York, as well as our headquarters here in Atlanta. And actually last Friday just celebrated an additional 80,000 square feet to make us 180,000
wow.
square feet in Tucker. So very exciting times.
And then for those who don't know, Exhibitus is kind of soup to nuts from a trade show standpoint, right?
We are. So we do everything from consulting with our clients when they initially come in for a trade show exhibit design. So we design those and then we go ahead and build it, do all of the construction drawings in-house.
That's why you needed the 80,000 square,
yes.
right?
Yes, yes.
Some of those things get pretty big, right?
They do. They get quite large. So we're excited to have a little bit more room to spread out.
Well, and this ties a little bit to the earlier conversation around ROI, because as I remember it, we had the pleasure of having some Exhibitus folks in here. I don't know, maybe it was last year sometime.
Lynn Reeves.
Okay.
Yes.
Specifically dedicated to collaborating with the client to identify and bring in ROI. You guys are really focused on ROI. You're not just opening up the catalog and showing them the pretty things you can build.
That's right. So we want to make sure that our clients who are the trade show exhibit managers are able to justify their programs to their bosses. A lot of times trade shows can be looked at as a large expense without a lot of return. And you have to have those results that you can track so that you can prove that the money's being spent well and more than just a, you know, this is how many sales we made from that show, but more in a, from a marketing perspective, you know, how many eyes saw our ads or our press releases and what value is there put to that. And that's what we help our clients with.
And you're not ducking it. You're hitting it head on. Whereas a lot of firms are trying to avoid that ROI conversation.
They want to measure anything but that. Some of them.
Yeah, no, we're actively working with our clients. In fact, we have a free self-assessment on our website where clients can go in and actually answer questions on their program based on their opinion of what's going on with the program. And we can base that on best practices to kind of show them where they're doing well and areas that they might need to improve.
And part of why we're here is to talk about the BMA, the Business Marketing Association. Can you talk a little bit about your involvement and why you joined?
Yes. So I am on the board of BMA and I joined because a lot of my clients are marketers and in what I do, I'm a assistant to that marketing effort that they're doing with what we supply for trade shows. So I wanted to get involved in something that's important to them. And we've been around for quite a while, but mm-hmm. our organization is unique because it's the only one that really serves B2B marketers. And so that was a great synergy with what I do.
Right. That made sense. And that BMA has gone through ebbs and flows throughout the years. And now I think it's coming back strong, right? There's a lot more energy around the organization lately.
There is. Yeah. We've joined up with ANA, the Association of National Advertisers. And that has increased our group as well.
Now, can you talk about cause marketing? Like is that the topic of an upcoming BMA?
Yes, this Wednesday.
You guys have meetings, what, every month?
Yeah, about every month there's a lunch and learn or some sort of networking opportunity. This Wednesday, April 18th at 11:30 at Maggiano's at Perimeter.
Maggiano's gets all the association business.
Yes, they do. And for good reason. Yeah. The last time I went to Maggiano's was a BMA meeting. And I'm sure the speaker was delightful.
Yes, but the food
but the food was marvelous.
Yes. Yeah, you won't leave hungry. But on this Wednesday, the 18th, we're going to be speaking on incorporating cause marketing into your trade show and event program. And I'm going to be presenting along with Lisa Lawley, who's at Cisco, and Kameh Mikos, who is at the Nordson Corporation.
So now when you're talking about cause marketing, that sounds like on the surface might be all feel good and just, you know, help the universe. But can you actually add an ROI component to cause marketing?
You can. Base your attendance of people coming to your booth. You can do all sorts of pre-show mailers and things at the show to judge how people are responding to the cause marketing at a trade show. You know, you're on a show floor full of people who are overwhelmed by all the different companies that are there, and you're always looking for some way to connect with them. Trade shows and events are one of those last human-to-human marketing places. And so doing something like this that kind of brings in a commonality for everyone can be a great way to open up those relationships.
And then are you going to, on your talk, you're going to share some strategies? Can we get a sneak peek of some of the highlights?
Yeah, there's several different strategies. And the session's going to really focus with a lot of case studies because we find that that people remember stories. And being able to share how other companies have incorporated the cause marketing into their program is a great way to do it. So some of the different ways that people can incorporate cause marketing into their programs are to look at maybe the location of where the show is and tying it into the location of that event, or even tying it into their specific message at a show. I know, for example, Exhibitus actually exhibits at a show called Exhibitor. Say that three times fast. This past year, we had the opportunity. We always incorporate cause marketing into our exhibit at that show too, and we actually had Dreaming Zebra, which is an organization that provides art supplies to homeless children. And so for everyone who came through our booth, we donated to Dreaming Zebra. And our theme at the show was the art of interaction, because we do have an engagement division as well, where we help our clients come up with interactive activities and things like that in the booth. And so everyone was able to come through the booth and sign off on a canvas for Dreaming Zebra. And so it was great.
Now, how do you kind of elegantly dovetail maybe your overall business objectives with a cause? I mean, I guess there's a lot of causes out there that would make sense. Like, how do you kind of choose the ones to partner with?
Right. So it's good to have that correlate with your company's values. And I saw a lot of similarities, Kristen, with what you were talking about with your company, and that it's just kind of part of your culture. At Exhibitus, we have a group that we created that I'm one of the leaders of as well, called Beyond Us. And we actually sent out a message to all of our staff and said, what do you care about? And everyone listed out the different organizations that they cared about. And we've made it a priority that every quarter we do an event as a company, you know, one, because we want to reach out to our community. It's part of our core values. And two, it's a great team building aspect for our company. And so we've gone to some of those different ones, and then those same ones correlate when we exhibit at shows.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I would think that doing that up front would ensure the authenticity and genuine investment by your people in that cause, because I can't quite explain it, but I have come across in some venues the vibe I got was, you know, we help poor people, so buy our stuff.
Right.
And that's not what you
want. Right. It can't be transactional. Right. It has to really.
Chris, you've seen this. You've come absolutely. Across the same vibe, right?
Yeah. Because I put a logo in the corner of my website.
It's got to be more than that. It's got to be a lot more than that. We got to think anytime we're giving back, we got to think from a generational standpoint. All the amazing stuff we're doing on the west side of town right now, it's absolutely amazing. But it doesn't matter if we plant 5 trees, doesn't matter if we put new sidewalks. If we're not changing the way somebody sees themselves, then how much change are we really impacting on those lives? And that's the ultimate goal from any type of cause marketing, cause campaigning, or giving back. It's really giving forward. Am I going to be able to look back in 25 years and say, I changed the direction of that child's life? That's mm-hmm. what we got to be looking for. It's got to be generational.
It's that impact.
Absolutely.
Right. So now, when you're working with your company and you're asking, you know, your people, hey, let's pick the right cause. How do you kind of accommodate the people that their cause is like totally unrelated to what your mission is and still make them, you know, have them be heard and still feel like they're participating?
Sure. So we try to do a really good job of explaining what we're doing next and what's coming in the future. So we actually just announced we're getting to be a bigger company, but we still have that smaller company family mindset. And so every month we have birthdays and anniversaries and the whole company comes into the break room and there's really not enough room for all of us anymore. and we took that opportunity actually last Tuesday to share what we were going to be doing next. We've had a lot of people asking to do stuff with animals. And so we're partnering with Paws Atlanta for a couple of days and going to have people go out there and do whatever Paws Atlanta needs us to do. And it's always nice when we can incorporate our skill set as well. So we'll probably be doing some construction items and things like that. And actually, as soon as I finish here today, I'm going to be running down to meet up with the rest of my team. And we are meeting with 3 families. We're going to be helping in the summer with an organization that's a division of Habitat for Humanity called Brush with Kindness, where we're going to be going and doing repairs to those homes. So we try to kind of bring in some of our skill sets as well.
And then an important component to any program is, you know, first you identify the need, then you do the work to serve that group. But it's also important to kind of tell the story that you've done this, right?
Right, right. Yeah, you have to, especially when you're talking about incorporating it into your trade show program or something like that, because you don't want that feel of, well, they're just saying they're doing that so that everyone thinks they're nice and buys stuff from them. That is absolutely opposite of what you want. So it's so important to say what you're going to say it, and then say what you did. And so we always make a really big effort on following up with everyone who comes and visit us at a show or something like that to let them know, you know, here's you came to our booth and this is what we did with the donation that we made on your behalf. And here's the lives that were impacted.
Now, Stacey, can you talk about in your career, you've been with Exhibitus for a while, but how important was it to not just kind of get involved superficially with different associations and groups, but to really take a leadership role in those organizations? Like, how did that impact your career?
It's been huge. It's something where I actually made a change about 2 years ago from being focused on sales and being an account executive and moved towards new business development. And when I made that change, there were a lot of things going on in my life too. And I had gotten the opportunity through my church to do some great programs. And I really wanted to bring that into the office, just kind of for that extra bit of fulfillment from a personal standpoint, not just professional. And our company has always been sponsored things and has donated when there's been a national disaster and that sort of thing. But there had never really been anything that we as employees really saw. And I just found it was really important from a culture standpoint, because I've been there from the very beginning and have seen all the changes, from a culture standpoint, to keep that small family feel that we have. And I thought this was a great way to do it.
So then when you stepped up and you took the initiative in this, then the company just said, go for it.
They did. It's right? An amazing company.
And that speaks to the culture of the company, right?
It
could have just
said,
oh, that's not how we do things. You know?
No, they absolutely did. I went to Brad and I said, you know, hey, I really want to do this. And he said, you know what? That's something that I've been wanting to do. And I just haven't had the time to put together to do it. And if you want to run with it, go. And it's been great. Every time we've come up with different ideas for our group, we've gone to him, shared them with him, and he's never once said, I don't think so. He said, go for it.
That's great. That must be really rewarding for you.
Yes.
Now, BMA upcoming events. I know you're speaking tomorrow, Wednesday,
yes,
right? And then what's on the calendar ahead?
There'll be another event in May. I think we're still nailing down the specific dates.
The topics.
But yes, but I would suggest if you're interested in coming to the event this Wednesday, you can go to bmaatlanta.org and get your tickets for it. It's going to be really great. We'll have lots of tons of food. But you can also check out the upcoming calendar on that website for future events as well.
And then that topic is cause marketing in the trade show space. But it's if you're just interested in cause marketing, you'll get some knowledge there too, right?
Yes, it's incorporating cause marketing in your trade shows and events. So it's kind of that human-to-human marketing arena. So,
and then for Exhibitus, what's the best way to learn more about what you're up to?
So you can go to our website at exhibitus.com. That's exhibit with an us. .com.
So I got the same question of you. Is the way you guys sell, is it by, it's by going to these trade shows of people who do trade shows? Is that because then they can see how cool your stuff is and all that, right? And then they have conversations with you and people like Lynn. And
yes, absolutely. So yeah, I go to a lot of shows and often I have clients there and I walk around and say hello to all the other exhibitors and let them know that if they want to see a really cool booth, they can go down on the second aisle and check us out. And then of course, a lot of, going and doing, things like this, where I am visiting with, being on the board of BMA and TAG and getting to meet the marketers in person. It's all relationship based.
So leadership, cause marketing, and booth envy. Those are your three strategies.
Yes. It works really well.
Well, thanks again for coming to hang with us one more time. Coordinates for reaching out and having a conversation with you or whomever.
Yeah. Yes. So exhibitus.com is our website. And if you want to email me directly, it's Stacey, S-T-A-C-I-E dot Beville, B-E-V-I-L-L-E at exhibitus.com.
And the bmaatlanta.org is the BMA.
Yes.
She's all over town. There's a TAG thing. There's a BMA thing. Who knows?
You can find her anywhere.
And she's a formal representative, I think, ambassador for Maggiano's.
Yes. Yes.
Is what I'm picking. Hey, stay with us. We're going to visit with one more guest.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. Lee, you ready for the headliner?
I am.
She's been very patient. I put her in a cage over here where she couldn't get out and run, you know, the rest of it was
so. So we have all these agency folks. Now we got the people doing the work. The real deal here now.
That's right. She is co-owner with Colo Collection and owner of Atlanta Made. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast, Michelle Larrabee Martin. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, we are delighted to have you join us. You have been very patient. You've been hanging out with us for a bit. What'd you learn, if anything, out of those last two segments? Pick up something you might be able to use?
I did. I go to a lot of trade shows. Stacey, I can't wait to see what you're up to. And Chris, I'd love your card before I leave.
Absolutely.
Have some great ideas. Marketing is key to what we do.
Absolutely.
So why don't we talk a little bit about what you do? Tell us about Colo.
So Colo Collection is a luxury high-end outdoor furniture living store. So you would come to us and turn your outdoor space over to us and we turn it into your fantasy.
That's that simple?
It's that simple.
I just give you a call?
Yeah. You call me, show up. A lot of people do their research on us, which is good. We've had a lot of people that we've been on CNN, which was a true blessing for our business. A lot of high-end celebrities. We've done their work. It's all referral. I've been doing this since 1988. So
before it was cool.
And I was only 10. And I was on the interior world. And then I jumped to the exterior world because I was traveling and realized that the United States did not do the exterior the way other countries did. Mm-hmm. We just don't live in it and use it the way other countries do. So we saw a niche and my husband and I decided to fill it.
And then, so that's how it started, that you were traveling. That's kind of like what happened with Starbucks, you know. The guy was traveling in Italy and he's like, these guys do coffee this way. How come we don't do it in the United States this way?
I actually wanted to start a coffee shop in Atlanta before Starbucks got here.
It was the same thing. You got inspired by going into other countries and seeing how they use their outdoor space. And you say, why can't we do that here?
That's right. Well, I lost my job. Mm. My company was sold after 16 years. And, I was devastated, but I decided at that moment I would not work for anybody else. And I didn't want to work for another big company. So my husband, with a law degree, he said, well, why don't we just open up our own business?
Well, so you both jumped off the cliff at the same
time? Wow. We jumped at the same time. Well, it took us a year.
I thought Chris's story good. It was just him.
I got approval from one.
We jumped at the same time. I decided to go back to work for somebody else for a year while he actually opened the business. And then I funneled designers to us.
Right.
And at our year mark, I went ahead and came over. And it was... no looking back.
So now tell us about at the beginning, what were you? We were just consultants? So you didn't have a showroom?
No, we opened a showroom on the west side.
So you invested?
We jumped in. Wow. We saved all of our money, went in debt free. We started with a line out of Denmark and we were nothing but teak furniture. And teak was very, very big back then. And I look at the pictures now and I'm...
But that's a big risk because those things changed because it was big back then. How is it today?
Well, it's not,
not today. Exactly.
We have a little bit of teak. Teak is very expensive. It's a beautiful product. But we evolve based on the economy and based on our client and based on the best products. There's so much manufacturing and it's changing every day and it's getting better and better. And especially now that here in the United States, we're living outdoors. It's increasing the value of your property by 20% to move your living to the exterior. So you can go look at a home that maybe the kitchen hasn't been renovated or the bathroom or the inside needs to be a little updated. But if they've really put a lot of money into the exterior, the home value is large. It's good.
So now how are you defining the outdoor area? Like what are some of the components of a well-equipped outdoor area?
Well equipped, but I love some cover. If people come to me and say, I have a sunroom or I have a grilling area, that's really helpful to us, especially here in the South because we're so moist. Mm-hmm. That we're going to be able to put any kind of material out there. If they come to us and I'm working on a wonderful couple right now that has a beautiful home in Chastain, but it is wide open, there's not one bit of shade anywhere. They still want the comfort of a cushion, but they don't want to take care of the cushions.
Right.
So that is a little challenging for us.
So you have to build in some cover?
Umbrellas are wonderful. Pergolas are great. There's so much shade structure now that we can do, but we do need shade, especially here in the South when it's 100 degrees.
Right.
Nobody's, and we're not sun worshipers like we used to be. I mean, the young kids might, but most people don't lay out by the pool all the time.
Right.
So I was out on my deck yesterday. We spent a lot of time on my deck and we don't have the cover that we wish we had and need to have. We are blessed with some nice shade and it blocks us from the Got Rocks neighborhood behind us. They're like a notch or two up above. But there's a lot of pollen. I said yesterday, I wasn't on the deck yesterday. It was raining. I was on the deck day before yesterday. So the fact that you have outdoor furniture, that's great. And it is tough and all that. But I mean, you still got to take care of it.
Right. Here's the misconception. And I would love for everybody to understand this. Outdoor furniture does not mean self-cleaning. You clean your car, you need to clean your furniture. And yes, aluminum furniture gets hot when you touch it. There are, you've got to take care of it. Mold and mildew will attach to dirt. It needs a food source. It grows in your shower. Yes, it will grow on your outdoor furniture.
Right. So you just have to incorporate cleaning as part of the routine.
It's maintenance. Right. You have to clean it. And how meticulous you are depends on what I can put outside. But during pollen season, I keep the blower right next to my door outside and I let the kids go blow everything off. Just keep the pollen off of it. Keep the dirt off of it.
But is that something that may be kind of a surprise and delight thing for your clients? Or you have all the tips and tricks in order to make that kind of easier?
Yes, I do. And I...
like my blower, that was a great tip.
Yeah, absolutely. You know about do it before, that? Yes, because the pollen is like, I don't know, blended in, you know, like I got to get out there and scrub it. Now I can't even just rinse it off. I got to get in there and, right? But if I'd have been blowing it every so often.
Right. If you blow it, it will stay off. And standing cushions straight up on their end helps gravity pull the moisture out.
Right.
It's a great idea. We have so many tips and I give, my cell phone is on my card. I have customers that text me. Yesterday, I had 3 customers text me. I don't know what to do. I don't know how to clean. We recommend cleaning products. We're here. We start the process, but we don't go away. We're still here. And in 10, 15 years, we have clients will come back with their children or ready to refresh, or they've moved and need more furniture, or they're tired of what they have and want something different. Right. So we have a lot of repeat business.
Now, for you, when somebody comes in, sometimes they have just challenges physically there, but can you help them in the, okay, we're going to build something, or you're just selling them the furniture and the stuff, or do you help them actually create that actual space?
I don't say no.
So like, I want a pool.
Well, I will guide them to find somebody to do that, but I will help design it.
Okay, so you'll design the shape of the pool?
I have not. If somebody wants me to do that, I will. Right now, I am building a beautiful oasis for somebody that lives right next to Alice Beach. And he and his wife came to me and said, I want an oasis. I don't want to see my neighbors. I don't want to see the people driving down the street or on their bicycles. And here's a blank slate. And I don't know what to do. And we have put palm trees in. I have not. I've helped design this. I've helped design a beautiful gate. I've helped design a beautiful pergola that we did make. We're having made in Miami.
But then you're kind of the general contractor, you're just pointing them, hey, hire this, hire them. And
yes,
then they're running it, but you're kind of consulting.
But
them.
You know that world. You know who I need to talk to for the palm trees and the pool and the outdoor kitchen and
yes,
the this and the that. Yeah?
Or I help guide them, or I'll say, go find three people and let's vet them.
And you know what questions
to ask.
I know what questions that we should ask.
So now, are there any trends in this space? Like you mentioned, like teak was good, you know, 20 years ago or 10 years ago. But what is today's thing that more people want?
Right now, it's a really crazy trend. It's deep seating. It's cushions. And it's cushions no matter where. And we're a little bit shocked that that has hit so fast, because cushions are wonderful and they're really, really comfortable. But they are a lot of maintenance. And the more people travel, the more that they go to these nice high-end luxury resorts
right,
that have
that's
cushions.
That's where they're like, hey, I want that at the house.
Well, here's the secret to that. They have three sets of cushions.
They don't have
they
one.
They put one on, one's being washed, and then they're rotating constantly.
Right.
So those cushions always look beautiful, especially those white cushions that
right,
everybody wants. But that's not reality. That's not how we live.
Right.
We have dogs and kids and work, and we're running. So I talk to them and ask them, are you sure that this is what you want? Can we do something different? And then we do a little bit of cushion, and then we do a lot of stuff that doesn't have any maintenance or
right,
little maintenance. It still needs to be cleaned. When I say no maintenance,
there's
that does
nothing,
not mean
there's no maintenance.
Don't clean it. Right.
No, this is really resonating with me because, you know, after we got the house built back up, my wife didn't mean to, but she burnt the house down about a year and a half ago. Actually, it wasn't her fault. It was mine. At any rate, after we got it all built back, the one thing that was left in pretty good shape was a deck that we had put up. It's really nice. And we've enjoyed it a lot the last couple of times. And so we have pieces in every category. And we don't have the high-end stuff that sounds like we ought to be taking a look at. But we've got some you really don't have to do hardly anything to. But we've got this one couch with the cushions. And I mean, you know, I haven't been good about staying on top of that. And it's probably not the high enough end stuff. So I should either go buy two more sets, right?
Right. And rotate that out.
And rotate it out like the hotel. Or I should get the cleaning product and, you know, do that on Saturday or something.
And then once you clean it, invest in a cover. Mm. Just cover the furniture. If it's pouring down rain,
right,
stand the cushions up or put them in a basement. But the furniture doesn't have to. You can buy really good quality and it will almost maintain itself.
Right.
Almost. Or you can buy the cheaper stuff, but you can still maintain it. There's a lot of times that we sell a product that's not necessarily the most high end, but for a third home or for a kid's going off to college, for a small balcony,
right,
there's a lot of great product out there that is made out of steel, not necessarily aluminum, that is not expensive. And it will last for 10, 20 years, but you still have to maintain it. It's just like your car is made of steel. The furniture doesn't have to be aluminum or stainless steel to last. You just have to be smart and maintain it.
So are you doing any cool stuff, or have you in your design work with the fire pit area?
The fire pit area is a great area. We love the natural fire pits. We have a lot of them that you can do the gas, or you can do the propane tank. The propane tank, you'll still have a cord that runs. And as a designer, I don't like to see the cord.
Right.
If we can bury the cord, then I'm a happy person. But the fire pit areas are wonderful that have the real wood burning. But the problem with that is they spark out and they ruin a lot of furniture. So you put plastic, and there are two amazing American made companies that are recycling water bottles and milk jugs. And that's the best stuff to put near a fire pit, because when the spark comes out, it does not burn.
It doesn't go all the way out.
It won't. It won't burn it. And it's recycling, and it's all made in America. It's a great product. And it's really, really comfortable.
Now, how do you kind of keep your eye on what's new and what's happening, especially American-made manufacturers of some of this stuff that's for outdoor?
American companies do aluminum and this new plastic very, very well. We go to the Chicago market. We go to trade shows like Stacy's talking about, and we observe. But most of the really better made product, which is made from HDPE, high density polyethylene, is the best for outdoor furniture. That all comes out of other countries, Belgium and Germany. Ipe, which your deck sounds like it could be made out of Ipe, which is one of the best woods. The Atlantic Boardwalk and a bridge in Paris is made out of Ipe. That's coming out of Bolivia. And then the really, really good teak that is at least, you know, 80 years old, it's coming out of Indonesia.
So you just are going to trade shows?
We're going to trade shows. And like Milan, right now, I wish I was in Milan. But
are you still traveling?
Yeah, so do I.
Yeah, right now, we can be broadcasting from there now.
Maybe next year.
Maybe.
But I mean, who knows this stuff, right? I mean, I don't know that. I know that I enjoy the fire pit area. I know that I enjoy being on the deck. I'm walking into your big box or your retail place and looking at that stuff. And that's...
And there's a difference. There's a difference between going into a big box patio store, which those are great places. And we need them. And then there is coming to us. Outdoor living is different than patio.
Yeah.
There's a very big difference. And patio has a place. But outdoor living is really growing. We've just opened our second location, only 4 miles from our first. And it's really, really doing well.
And that in that location are actual stuff. So you can see the things in action.
You can touch and feel everything. We have...
Those big cushions.
Even the big cushion, actually a lot of big cushion right now because that's so popular.
Not white. That is a fantasy white for a hotel. Well, she's going to talk you out of white.
I don't show white on the floor because I don't want you to buy it.
You don't even want to go there, right?
I'm doing a house right now in Lake Oconee and I'm wondering if she's listening. And everything is white.
Oh my.
And I tried to talk her out of it, but she got teary and she said, "This is my dream. And I want white." So I said, "Everything's going to get a cushion cover."
Right.
Right. And it's a very big house on Oconee. And this was their dream that they've been working for 10 years. So,
And you have two locations?
We have two locations. Our original is on the west side, which I think, Chris, you were probably close to us. We're off Howell Mill Road.
Okay.
And then we opened at ADAC, the Atlanta Decorative Arts Center.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Oh, and I saw in my extensive pre-show research, as I often do, you graduated from the Art Institute.
I did.
Is that true?
Yes.
I'm sending them checks now.
Are you?
I have a kid over there, and she's thoroughly, just a little plug for the Art Institute, she is getting so much value from that experience.
It was the best thing I ever did. I moved here not knowing what I wanted to do, always feeling like I wanted to be creative. And I saw one of their commercials, and I started going to night school. And one of my teachers is a very good client of mine now. She took me over to the Atlanta Decorative Arts Center, and I decided that's what I would do. The day I graduated, I started there.
Wow.
That's great.
Well, if somebody wanted to learn more or wants to kind of build their dream outdoor living space, can you tell us the coordinates? Where can they go?
Yes. Our website is colocollection.com. No S on collection. Or you can reach me at Michelle with two L's at colocollection.com.
And that's K-O-L-O collection.com.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, it is.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being part of the show today.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton, our producer, Katie Galley, and everybody here at the Business Radio X family saying we will see you next time on Atlanta Business Radio.